What the Health with Gabby Allen on FUBAR Radio.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Everybody, welcome back to What the Health Show. Thanks for listening to us today. You are in the right place if you want to dive head first, feet first, boobs first into the infinite world of health and fitness with its never-ending myths, hot topics and TikTok trends. Each week, we are joined by wellness industry leaders and professionals to discuss, dissect new trends and misconceptions. And I'll tell you what, it is a weird and wonderful world out there. I've had some epiphanies since doing this show every Tuesday, and I'll tell you what, it's never ending, trust me. On that point, if you've missed any of our previous shows, you can go back and give them a listen on Spotify and all the other good podcast platforms. Just search for What The Health Show and you should see a little pic of my gorgeous little face. And obviously, we want to help you in your fitness journey as well. So to help you reach your goals, at the end of each show, I respond to your guys and your fitness questions or your wellness questions. So make sure you stick around for that today, because you never know, someone could ask a question that you want to ask. Or in the meantime, drop us a DM on our Instagram, which is at What The Health Show, and we'll do our best to come back to you. So what do we have coming up today then? A bit later on, we have an amazing show, by the way. We have Sarah Benn, an England women's rugby player. Insane. And Dame Kelly Holmes, Olympian. Cannot wait for you to meet them. But first things first, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, he's not here yet, but we are waiting for him. So, in the meantime, we are going to talk about the London Marathon. Guys, did anybody go this weekend? Because, listen, I am... We're going to get to this later in the listener questions, by the way. But when I was watching, I'm in my runner's era right now. So I'm going out every now and again for a little 5K and absolutely loving it. There's a such thing as a runner's high. However, when I was watching that marathon, I was thinking, rather you than me, guys, because how do they do it? The mental, not even about the legs, not about that, like the endurance, the mental resilience that you must have to be able to do that is actually insane. Honestly, hats off to anybody that did it this weekend. It was incredible to see. I actually saw a couple of people that I knew when they were going past, and they said that because they weren't expecting me and I was able to, like, you know, shout that I was going, Bradley, Bradley. He was like, it was the boost that you didn't know that you needed and spurred them on to carry on for, you know, a bit longer. So I'm just wondering, is he in the his house? Oh, he is. Hello, Dr. Idris. Are you there? Are you there? Can you hear me?
Hello.
Hi, love. Hi.
Yes, I can hear you well. How are you?
Fantastic. Yes, I'm good, thank you. Happy Tuesday. Where are you in the world?
I'm in South Africa.
Oh my God, what are you doing there? Is that where you live?
Yeah. No, it's not where I live. I'm just here for a bit of work. And also my wife's family's from here and my wife is from here, so.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's on my bucket list of places to go, so enjoy it for me.
It's beautiful.
Yeah,
no, you should.
I'll be coming for you for some recommendations later. Okay, yeah. So let's jump straight into it then. Why did you start posting on social media?
Good question. This originated back in 21, where the lockdown happened. And my doctor colleagues of mine were like, you know, now that you can't give any in-person advice, and, you know, I was a personal trainer, I used to train people in the gym, and obviously I was doing medicine as well. So basically it originated from the fact that I couldn't continue my in-person activities and education. So they were like, why don't you go on the biggest thing, like which is TikTok now. I said, oh, surely, you know, TikTok's not only for, you know, teenage girls dancing and stuff, right? And then little did I know, after a couple of weeks of scrolling through TikTok, the education space on social media was absolutely huge. Mm. Not only was it huge, it was rife with misinformation. So I remember coming across a video saying how to lose, you know, 10 pounds in 2 weeks. And it was a lady dressed in the latest fitness gear and holding a cucumber lemon lime blend of whatever it was, right? And I was like, surely people aren't buying into this. And it had like 20 million views, you know, 10,000 comments being like, oh, I'm going to start this tomorrow. That was when it clicked. I was like, I need to jump on. I need to start.
Need to tell people that that does not work.
yeah, exactly. So that's when it happened.
Amazing. So for anyone that doesn't know, I actually didn't formally introduce you. This is Dr. Idris Mughal. Is that how I say it? Yes. NHS doctor and nutritionist and now TikToker, social media enthusiast. I'm actually just looking at your page and it's so good because all the like cover photos, straight to the point, like corn is made from fungus. Citrus acid is toxic. Like all these things, I'm like, what? I need to know more about this. So go and check them out. It's Dr. Ids, Dr. underscore Ids on Insta. Okay, so have you ever had any pushback from your videos?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, I've had several hundred people, maybe 1,000, make videos on me, trying to call me out or trying to
respond to me. You've been at it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I respond to some of them. And I kind of highlight the logical fallacies they use, or, you know, the when they don't really understand the point that I'm saying, that, you know, for example, the poison is in the dose, right? So the dose makes the issue, not necessarily the ingredient. So, for example, you know, we find cyanide in apples, right? Are you going to say that apples are poison? Obviously not, because it's about the dose, isn't it? It's about how much of that compound you're consuming, not the actual compound itself. So people really, they run into kind of these logical fallacies, these inconsistencies. So yeah, people do respond to me and I get a lot of negative comments, but the overwhelming support from the 2.5 million plus followers that I've got so far is just fantastic. So
that's
you
mental.
Know, I'm not going to be deterred. I'm not going to be disheartened. I'm going to continue because I get the thousands of messages, you know, every month.
Yeah, the good stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And also, this is someone actually said this to me last week. I was like, oh, concentrating on, you know, a negative comment or something. And my manager person was like, this is a good thing. It's giving you engagement. It's only going to boost your video more. So welcome that in. And then it gives you stuff to respond back to as well. It gives you like the facility, like the opportunity to be able to, you know, show your knowledge and show how, once again, you're going to prove them wrong. So love that for you.
Adds more fuel to the fire.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so there seems to be, talking of which, you talked about that celery juice thing. My friend's obsessed with that. And I mean, I don't know whether it works or not, but she looks great. But I don't think it's just that. I think it's probably the 10K run she does every day. there seems to be a different diet being promoted every year, from keto to carnivore to all sorts. Why do you think that is?
Well, this likely comes from the fact that the majority of people that try to diet or try to lose weight inevitably fail. So, you know, they're constantly looking for new ways or new, you know, marketing schemes to really attract them, to, you know, draw them in to this being the correct way or kind of the correct answer. And the funny thing is, all of the evidence shows that actually, if you followed, you know, intermittent fasting down to a T, if you followed keto down to a T, if you followed plant-based eating down to a T, none of them actually give you better results than the other in terms of purely weight loss or weight gain, you know, when total calories are the same. What matters is your adherence. So how likely are you to stick to it? Right. So if you know that you love eating with your family at 9 p.m. because that's when your husband comes back from work, that's when your kids want to eat, that's when you want to have a snack and watch TV, then it's probably not a good idea to start intermittent fasting where you're only eating from 12 to 6.
Yeah.
Right. Because how long are you going to realistically maintain that? So I think the dietary plan that you choose to follow needs to be sustainable for your lifestyle situation. It needs to be healthy, number two. So that's why I didn't even mention the carnivore diet, because, you know, completely excluding plant-based foods is ridiculous. All of the evidence just shows you're much better off in terms of your long-term health by including lots of veggies and fruits, right? So, you know, we just have to focus on what you have to make your diet a lifestyle strategy that you can see yourself doing for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
If you can't see yourself doing it for the rest of your life, there's no point doing it.
100%. This is what I say. You have to incorporate something that works for you, that you're going to be able to be consistent with. Changing too many things in your life, you know, so I get clients come to me and they want a whole new life and they want new fitness regime, new food, like new meal plan, everything. And they want to change it all. And then after about 3-4 weeks, one of them starts to give. They're like, I can't do this anymore. It's finding it hard. And it's because you're trying to change too much too soon. Even just making small changes, as I said, intermittent fasting, just shortening your window period, if that's going to help you, like, not eat so much outside of that. But, you know, don't cut out those 9 p.m. dinners because that's what you're used to doing. So if that means that you have to work that, you still need to work that into your lifestyle, right? I completely agree with you. Okay, so is there, I know that you said talking about all diets could work if you actually just stuck to them, but talking about fad diets, are there any fad diets that actually are worth exploring?
So I would say, I actually write about this in my book, intermittent fasting, if done correctly, when I say correctly, I mean your eating window is in the earlier part of the day. So let's say you wake up at 9 a.m. and you go to bed at 9 p.m., right? If your eating window was 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., so the first half of your day, right? There are potential additional benefits beyond just the number of calories you're consuming. And the reason I say this is because our body follows a circadian rhythm, a 24-hour cycle, right? And throughout evolutionary history, we've not had to digest and metabolize as much food as we do now in the nighttime, because we wouldn't be eating at night, because once the sun comes down, we wouldn't be able to hunt, we wouldn't be able to cook, we wouldn't be able to, you know, do all of the things that we are able to now because of the modern environment, right? So our body is not as efficient at regulating blood glucose in the night. It's not as efficient at breaking down fatty acids at night. And we also have a slightly lower resting metabolic rate at night. So bearing this in mind, there are some very fascinating control studies I cite, which look at the same number of calories, but our ability to regulate glucose homeostasis or regulate blood sugar is better in the daytime. So for metabolic health and potentially weight loss benefits, if you consume the majority of your calories earlier in the day through something like intermittent fasting, then you could reap additional benefits beyond just consuming 1500 calories and then 1500 calories doing keto.
Yeah.
Right. So there are potential superior benefits. However, this once again falls into the modern environment. How likely are you to stop eating at 3 p.m. every day?
Impossible.
What if you get invited to a dinner?
Impossible.
What if you know? Yeah, exactly. Right. So you have to weigh up, okay, are these, you know, potential benefits worth jeopardizing, you know, my happiness, my social occasions, my family gatherings? You have to remember there are also benefits from including yourself in society. So you've got the relationships, you've got the happiness, the smiles, the laughs, you've got the social environment. So these are also potential benefits as well.
I like that. And you could also use that eating window just a little bit later, couldn't you? So as I said, just make it work into your life a bit better, so you're not eating. Because if I couldn't eat after 3 p.m., there would be a dead person somewhere because I would have to kill them.
Yeah, same.
Okay, so I want to ask you about your book, Saturated Fact.
Yeah.
Tell me about it. Why did you write it?
Good question.
I love the title, by the way, Saturated Fact. I love it.
Yeah, and I think we are in an environment where there's just too many supposed facts around, because, you know, I wrote it as a corrective to the massive amount of misinformation out there. You know, every day, for every 200 videos I get tagged in a day, you know, I sometimes get tagged in about 400, but on average about 200 a day.
Wow.
95 to 97% of them are absolute garbage. Absolute garbage. And they're often the ones that have the most views, the most likes, because reasonable evidence-based advice is not sexy. It doesn't sound revolutionary. It doesn't sound new and exciting, right? Mm-hmm. Because we know what leads to better health. We know doing your exercise, eating your fruits and veggies, having lean protein sources, having fatty fish, having your nuts and seeds, these things are healthy, right? It can only be repeated so many times. So when someone comes out with a new revolutionary way or way to scare you from buying certain products, or, you know, these garner attention and views. So I wrote Saturated Facts as a comprehensive one-stop shop to debunking all of the ridiculous claims out there, all of the kind of pseudoscientific wellness fads, trends about inflammation, gut health, weight loss, you know, diet and depression, diet and dementia. So I cover the majority of topics that I have personally seen in the online space. Mm. And I dive into it with over 400 references in a 200-page book.
Wow.
I think that's unheard of.
Yeah, that's
so
crazy.
I love, I love my scientific critique ability, right? So that I just hope people can benefit from it, and it will be a one-stop shop for anyone that's confused with the online space.
Amazing. That's called Saturated Facts, guys. And where can we get it? Amazon?
Amazon, yeah, Waterstones,
Amazing.
even, yeah, Waterstones, in person and online as well. So yeah.
Amazing. Well, I definitely want one of those, please.
Yeah.
It was so amazing talking to you today, Dr. Idris Mughal.
Thank you.
I would love one my hands on one of those books. I hope you have an amazing time in South Africa. I will be coming to you for some advice on that as well. But yeah, I will speak to you soon and have a gorgeous day.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
Thanks for
so
your time. I
much.
really
Take
appreciate
care.
it. Take care.
Take care. How amazing. I don't really use TikTok, but I think there must just be so much on there that he every day is probably just like, what now? What else do I have to debunk? Well, I suppose that's just like the beauty of it, isn't it? He's always got something to talk about, which is lovely. Okay, speaking of talking about stuff, exercise of the week, I have just been talking to you about the London Marathon. So we're just going to elaborate on that a little bit. As I said to you, I am in my running gal era right now. So I know that running isn't for everybody. And I have to say, like, clients come to me and they say, I can't run, which isn't always true. Like, obviously, there's some people that can't run, but for the most part, people that come to me can. It's just like people either feel embarrassed or they don't know if their running technique's right or they're not used to it. And I think I get it. It's just, I'm trying to let you know that I am now obsessed with it because of the feeling afterwards. Because, have you heard of the thing, run is high? It is actually, it's true. And I'm just doing 5K runs. Can you imagine how these people feel after a marathon of, what is it, like 26 miles or something like that? 26.2 miles. Thank you, Maddie. So yeah, I like that must just be like that feeling of accomplishment and just it's endorphins, right? That's what like and that's what are released when you exercise. But doing a 26.2 mile run must just be endorphins through the roof. So basically, I'm just gonna put it out there. For those of you that fancy dipping your toe in, honestly do it because you don't have to be good. You don't have to become an endurance runner overnight or a sprinter, but it will just make you feel good. You've all got to start somewhere. Just put your cap on, put your music on. All I would say, a few technique points that my brother's taught me after he's done triathlons, marathons, ultramarathons, all that stuff. Land in the middle of your foot, not on the heel or the toe. Don't lean forwards. Apparently, I was running forwards, like, with my bum behind me like a bloody ostrich. Try not to hold too much tension in your arms and shoulders. Let them relax and they'll naturally move with you. Chin down. And to run long distance, this is why Beyoncé ran on a treadmill singing her album. Because you should be able to run and talk at the same time, and that's what builds your lung capacity and endurance levels. So, let me know how you get on, and I will see you after this break, and we're going to be talking to Sarah Benn, England women's rugby player. Unreal. Speak to you soon.
Follow us at What the Health Show for more from Gabby. This is What the Health.
FUBAR Radio presents
What the Health with Gabby Allen.
Joining me now is Millie Gooch, author and founder of Sober Girl Sobriety Society. I need to know what is so bad about dating sober.
I think it's just terrifying when it's something that you're not used to. Because when I was drinking and dating, like you use it to calm your nerves, you use it for confidence, you rely on it. And I think that's the one thing I realised when I stopped drinking is how much I really relied on alcohol. I was always kind of saying, like, oh, I'm not dependent on it. But for my confidence, I was really. But I also think there's so many benefits to it. Like I used to go on so many dates when I was drinking, I'd be like, they are the one. And then I'd meet them a few weeks later sober and I'd be like, we've got nothing in common. What was going through my mind? I'd be like, oh, it was because I was drunk.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
Harpreet, how are you, my love?
I'm great, thank you. How are you? It looks fun in there.
I want to talk about this because obviously you met your partner on The Apprentice. When did you start to get that feeling, I'm into him and this is more than just a banter or a friendship? Because it's a close environment being on a show like that, isn't it?
I really wish I could sit here and give loads of juicy gossip, but actually we used to secretly meet in the laundry room on the show, but we didn't. And when I actually last spoke with yourselves, I think it was right after I'd won, we weren't even flirting, never mind dating. First time that I thought I actually fancied him was when I watched him on TV and I watched episode one.
How funny.
Hang on. He's actually really good looking.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani.
And joining me in the studio, we have Deputy Leader of the Green Party, Zach Polanski. Zach, thank you so much for joining us. How are you keeping, Zach?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. How are you?
So you're hoping for four MPs in the general. You think that's going to happen?
Yeah, that's absolutely the minimum at what we're
I don't want to be Piers Morgan here, but will you take out, I don't have £1,000, will you take a £100 bet with me that you'll get four MPs?
Well, I do everything in politics to talk about the harms of gambling. So for me to place a bet on there would be pretty,
you know,
pretty horrendous.
Before we had you on, we discussed with the producers as to whether I should do the bet joke. And I said I would, because I had every faith that you would answer it in the way I expect a politician of any moral standing.
We should also talk about cryptocurrency, which also is very problematic.
Rishi, if you're listening, mate, that's how you answer a betting question.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Hello guys, welcome back to What The Health Show. We are now joined by the incredible Sarah Byrne, England women's rugby player. Hi Sarah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Hi lovely, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, no worries, it's lovely to be here.
Well, let's just get straight into it then. Why did you first get into playing rugby?
To be honest, when I was younger, I was really sporty. So I played loads of sports, and I was very close in age with my cousin. And my cousin started playing rugby, and I went down to watch him. And someone there was like, "Why don't you have a try?" And I thought, "Okay, yeah, why not? Give it a go." And ever since then, I kind of tried my first game, and none of the boys wanted to pass the ball to me. And one day I managed to pick up the ball, and I ran the length of the pitch and scored. And ever since then, all the boys were like, "Yeah, pass to Sarah, pass to Sarah."
Oh my God! Never look back.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, so that was how I started, and yeah, just enjoyment and having really good friends around me is kind of how I stayed in and developed my career. Yeah.
That's amazing. I come from a family of rugby over football kind of players, but I don't think they would have ever trusted me on a pitch. I would have ran in the other direction, probably. The ball would have come towards me. I'd be like, no, bye. So that's amazing. So what was it like then to get your first call up for England?
It was really special. It was a bit of a long one, because I played a different position. I played, I don't know how much everyone knows about rugby, but I was a back rower. So I was a bit more free, kind of did what I wanted.
Yeah, and then you move forward.
They wanted me to move positions and play as a prop. And when I originally got asked to do it, I said, "Nah, I don't really want to." There was like quite a stereotype of like props were unfit. They were kind of like your slower players. And this is ages ago now, which is very, very much changed. But in community rugby especially, that's how it was seen. And I was like, no, I want to be really athletic. And the first time the coach asked me, I said, no, I don't want to do that. I want to still be a back row. And he sat me down another time, and he was like, right, well, I want you to be the same player you are, but I want to teach you how to scrummage. Like, I want you to play as a back row, but I want you to learn how to scrum and learn that art form. And when he posed it to me like that, I said, okay, fine. And he's like, you don't have to be anything. You can be you. I just want to teach you how to scrum.
Yeah.
And at the time I was really into sevens. So I was playing a lot of sevens, with the youngers, which is like, it's in the Olympics. Like, mm-hmm. You can watch it. It's a fast paced kind of game. And I said to him, I said, oh, okay, right, I'll take your opportunity. I'll say, yes, I'll be a prop. I said, on two conditions. I said, one, you put in the work, because I didn't know anything about it, to make me the best prop in the world. And then he went, okay. And then I said, the second one is that I can still play sevens. And he went, okay, deal. And I've not played sevens since 2017. But I really enjoyed it, the move, and he worked so hard to teach me. I had 8 months to learn how to do it before going to a World Cup.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, so it was hard work, and he did a really good job. And then, yeah, I played in that World Cup in 2017 as a 18-year-old. So it was quite special to get that cap, because it was a lot of extremely hard work to learn how to do it in such a short space of time. And to be honest, I wasn't very good when I went.
Yeah, but how amazing that they obviously saw the potential in you. They were like, we need her, and we want her to do this role because we know that we've got it in you. And even though I know you might have wanted to be I don't really know too much about it, but more athletic, but like, that's just like kind of like how you perceived it at that time, and then you got put in that role and like changed it all. You were able to do both. That's amazing.
Yeah, so it was very special, but very nerve-wracking, because it was the first time.
It's my first time, and you're making me change everything.
Yeah, and it was like my first cap, and I feel like that was the first game I played as a prop was against France. So.
Oh my God, I know that France are obviously really good, right? They're just good at everything. Why? It's so annoying.
they have really good like a development pathway. So they're young, they're like kids, they're under 20s, like absolutely smash England all the time. They always have, but England also have a good pathway. But I don't know, their youngsters are just amazing.
Yeah, I feel like everyone in the hotter countries are always amazing because they get more time outside in the better weather. Anyway, so the Six Nations took place last month. How gutted were you not to partake? It's so sad. Sorry about that.
No, but yeah, no, it's fine. So the Women's Six Nations is still on now. So the girls are playing France this weekend, actually, away in France. And it's been really kind of obvious. You always want to play. It's important to play. But being injured, it's been a really good opportunity to stay involved and do other bits and pieces in the media. So it's been great to go and do some BBC commentary. It's been great to like go to O2 and do some commentary with them. And just really like get a different feel and be kind of a fan and celebrate rugby and not just be really focused.
Yeah, you can actually enjoy it. Yeah.
So, although it's sad and my rehab's going really well, which makes a big difference if your rehab's going well and, you know, I'm kind of on track to
That's good.
Getting back, which means I can enjoy other bits and pieces that you don't always have time for when you're playing so much.
Yeah, so you get the best of both worlds, kind of. You can still be in it, but you can just chill as well.
Yeah, like no pressure.
Yeah. So speaking of which, I know that you say that the pathway for young people is better in other countries or whatever, but the Rugby World Cup, well, rugby is predominantly still a male sport, right? Do you feel like it's becoming more prominent in the female world? Do you think you ever come across challenges being a female rugby player? Is it, you know, do you feel like you have restrictions?
Yeah, I think growing up, it was really seen as quite a male sport and it was very much like, oh, you play rugby, there was a lot of stigma attached to it or it's very manly. Definitely over the last like 15 years, that's changed massively. And even over the last five, like so many, it's the fastest growing sport in the world, women's rugby.
Wow.
And there's a big push in England at the minute ahead of the World Cup to, it's called Impact 25 and it's to get, I can't remember the specific numbers, but it's to get loads more women engaged and that can be whether through coaching, through refereeing, and through participation. So there's a big push there and actually we're seeing loads of uptake on that.
Wow.
It's really exciting. It's exciting time for women and hopefully that the World Cup is in England. It will really start to pick people up.
Yeah, how amazing is that?
Yeah, and it's great because a lot of the times you go to stadiums and you see young kids and you're like, oh, where do you play? What position do you play? And actually the first time this Six Nations I've gone round and fans have come up and I've been like, oh, where do you play? And they're like, oh, I don't play, I just love watching it. Which is such a nice kind of change, subtle change, to be like people actually just find it very much entertaining and they want to come and be a part of it because it's a great environment. And that's the bit that's changed quite a lot for me is people see it now as an equal entertainment source and say it's really exciting and it's not just for people who like rugby or, you know, people see it as equal and they really want to be involved in it in some way.
Yeah. Do you think we're going to win? England?
Yeah, I hope so.
We better add to.
We've been to two now and we've lost in the final. So I'm really hoping this time in England at Twickenham and hopefully we sell that stadium out as well.
Yeah, we've got to. How amazing would that be? We need to. Yeah. Okay, so has playing rugby affected your relationship with your body, how you see yourself?
Yeah, I think I was always quite broad as a youngster. I was very, very athletic, but I was a lot bigger. Like, I was just a lot bigger everywhere. Like, I was still athletic and sporty, but I was just bigger than all the other girls, and I felt quite conscious about it. And you know, I think society puts a lot of pressure on women to look a certain way and be a certain way, and I have nothing against, like, if that's what you want then that's brilliant, but sometimes not everyone fits that mold and people shouldn't be made to feel bad because they don't fit that
100%.
And actually everyone should just be happy to express themselves in whatever way and enjoy the life how they want to. So I think for me, actually, it was great because rugby gave you this element where actually being big and strong was a super strength. It was like, instead of it being like, oh, you're big, that's, you don't, you know, you go into a shop, but they don't have the chest size for my shoulders. It's actually like, no, this is great because you are now in one of these key positions that we really need. And everyone's like, wow, that's amazing. So it is really good for body positivity, and also just that there's a role for everyone and there's no need to fit into a certain box.
100%. I think that's the world is getting better at being more accepting and being more, you know, like not one size fits all anymore, which I definitely am seeing a lot more of, which is nice. And I think we're always going to come across bloody stigmas of, you know, it changes from year to year. Like one year, women are meant to be skinny. The next year, you're meant to have a massive bum. You know, like it's just, we're never going to be able to keep up. But I feel like it is kind of getting better.
Yeah, the big focus is health, right?
Like 100%.
You can be, a lot of people and think beauty is different things. There's so many different ways to be beautiful. And it's not always, like I said, the one way. And the main thing, are you healthy? Are you happy? And I think that's the thing that people always kind of forget, or it gets pushed aside a lot of that in our lives now, is actually we're always trying to find how to be happy, but I don't think we always like hit that pause button and actually think, oh, I have a pretty good life. Or,
yeah, exactly.
And I think, yeah, so my thing is like, are you healthy, and actually what brings you joy? Like, do the things that are joyful. You only have one life. Why hold on to the things that, you know, really pull
you. Yeah, why give a shit about what anyone else says? Just be like the best version of you. If you're a bloody amazing women's rugby player, be that. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter that you're not something else. Sod that.
Yeah, and also it's life. Like, things will pull you down. That's fair. And, like, definitely feel and have those emotions. But also remember, like, you are you and you are great. Like, there's no other you. So kind of pull yourself, dust yourself back off and step out there again and try something that you love and that, like I said, brings you joy.
I love that. Love that. That's the quote of the day. You are you. Love that. So what has your, being you then, what has been your biggest achievement so far?
For me, an individual one is that I got nominated, I think in 2019, for World Player of the Year.
Wow.
I'm the only prop in my position, male or female, ever, to be nominated for that award.
That's so amazing.
Yeah, which I actually didn't know that fact until I think last year, which I thought, wow, it's amazing. And to be even be nominated with such the caliber of players that get nominated for that is fantastic. But to be the only player in my position, male or female, to be nominated for that, and that's a real kind of, you know, pat on the back. It's a real accolade in itself. But I hope one day I can win the World Player of the Year award, because that is something that I would love to do. But just to be nominated is absolutely phenomenal.
That is amazing. I have faith that you will. You'll get back after your injury and you're going to come back stronger and you're going to take over the world, girl. Okay, and then lastly, if there is anything that you could tell your younger self, I know that we've spoken about you being you and, you know, how you were as a child and stuff. But if you could speak to the amazing younger Sarah, what would you say to her?
I always find this question really difficult, because I think a lot of the way I've got here is by, you know, what I've done in the past. And I did work incredibly hard. And a lot of the time, no, I didn't go out with my friends loads. Or I think people would look at it and think that's quite sacrifices or quite driven. But I think it's really got me where I am. I think I would probably so I wouldn't want to change any of that, but I would just say always try to find the enjoyment and take the pressure off of myself, that actually continue to work hard and do the things that you think will get in the right place, but learn to enjoy that hard work, especially when you're young, is I think it's something that, you know, you have to do. And I think if you think you have to do it, it becomes not as exciting or joyful, where when you think this is going to help me, it can be a real exciting thing or something that you find that brings happiness. So I think take the pressure off and enjoy the journey a little bit more.
Are you, you mentioned earlier about speaking to kids and they say that they just watch it though. Is it actually, are girls getting to play it in school now?
Yeah, it's getting into the curriculum. A lot of it is tag rugby, which is great. It's another kind of role of it. It really depends where you go. If you have a PE teacher who loves rugby,
yeah,
the kids then love it. And I've been to a few schools where I've done a session and the kids are going, oh, can we do contact? I'm like, oh, I'm not insured for that. Don't do that.
Yeah. So it's tag rugby where you run over and like you just get the ball like without tackling them.
Yeah, so it's kind of like it's a non-contact version of rugby. So you grab the tag and that's essentially the same as a tackle. You have to stop and pass it backwards.
Okay, fine.
Which is really good, but I think it definitely could be pushed a lot more into schools. And I think it would be good, instead of the boys doing rugby in winter and football and the girls doing netball and hockey, actually it could be an option to do tag rugby as well.
And then I'm just getting carried away now, so I've got a couple more questions for you. So, you know the way Lionesses is like blown up? Do you think that like we are on the same path with women's rugby as well? Where can you see us going basically in the next 5 years?
Yeah, 100%. Well, we've gone from having, you know, about 3,000-5,000 fans over the last 5 years to having a stadium full of 60,000, and that's within 5 years. So for me, I think the growth is going to be massive over the next five. The way that when the women won the Euros, that didn't only accelerate women's football, but it actually accelerated women's sport, and rugby is alongside that journey. And we really support the Lionesses, and we, you know, like, they hopefully support us back.
Yeah.
And we've done a few joint things with them. And it's just, I think it's going to go massively. I think it will follow the trajectory of women, women's football. But we're just slightly behind on that. So I think it's going to be absolutely massive in the next few years. And we're starting to see that now with television figures, stadium numbers, and just people generally, you know, following the Red Roses and following England rugby.
And if people want to watch women's rugby, where do they go to watch it? Where's the best place to start?
So there's loads of different places. So you can probably, if you want to see a live game, go just type in your local area and watch the local premiership team there. You know, we've got a lot all over the country. But if you want to watch it on the telly, BBC this weekend, England versus France, that'll be a great game to watch. So make sure you tune into that. I'll also be there doing the punditry.
Amazing!
Which will be exciting. That's probably the best one to just get into. It's easy to access. And there's a few other ways. If you follow your local club, you can then follow the live streams. I know Saracens do live streams of all their premiership games, and follow Premier 15s. That also, the PWR, Premiership Women's Rugby even. Yeah. also, they have live streams as well. So it just Google women's rugby and it will come up. How can I watch it? Something will come up for you.
Okay, final question. I'm going to ask you again. Will England win the Six Nations?
I don't know. I don't want to. Yeah, I think they will. I believe.
Don't jinx it.
So yeah, I don't want to jinx it. France are definitely a hard team, so it will be really interesting. That will be a really tough game. But just the way that England are playing at the minute, they look a bit unstoppable. So I'm going to say England. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's fingers crossed. I really hope that they do. It's been so amazing talking to you. I've learnt so much. I literally want to go and watch it now, and I'm not really into much sport, to be honest. So, you know, I'm going to be watching yours on Saturday, and hopefully I'll hear your little voice as well. I'll be like, I was talking to her the other day. Thank you so much for joining us today, hon. I hope you get better soon. All the best with your recovery. And
awesome. Thank you very much.
I'll speak to you soon. Thank you. Take care. How amazing. So, guys, you better be watching on Saturday. We all need to get those viewers up, and we want to make sure that England win France. They need to know that the support is there, okay? After this break, we are going to be joined by... Is it after this break? Yes? We're going to be joined by the incredible, the amazing Dame Kelly Holmes. So don't miss that. Speak to you soon.
Keeping fitness fun. What the Health with Gabby Allen.
Hey! FUBAR Radio presents
Access All Areas.
Mark from Married at First Sight UK.
See, at the wedding, you told Sean you were 26, but you're actually 36.
Oh, yeah.
So drop in that decade. We ain't gone 1 or 2 years either side. What was going through your head when you thought, I'm going to shave off 10 years?
A 26. Third of your life.
Yeah.
It was instant reaction. As soon as anyone says to me, how old are you? I'm like 26. I just stopped counting after 26. Would I have told him? Probably not.
No. Ever?
Well, maybe when we're 80 years old and we've got the grandkids running around. And
except
like,
you wouldn't be 80 years old. You'd be 88, you'd be 90.
I'd be 26 still. I'd be going around the corner for some more injections.
Politics Uncensored. Joining me now, the former leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, MP. And there you are stood with hundreds of thousands of people at Glastonbury singing "Oh, Jeremy Corbyn." What is that like?
It was quite extraordinary. It was an amazing experience, and I was very pleased we did it. We wrote, the office got very excited about Glastonbury. Every single person in the office thought it was necessary for them to be at Glastonbury with me.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. Yeah.
Every single one said it's really necessary for me to come. The
Dating Show. I'm friends with a fair few exes, and I think you can be friends with an ex, but I genuinely do. But I do think that timing is everything with that.
Well, I think it depends what you cast as a friend. Yeah, Are you talking about, you know, someone you're going to hang out with on your sofa? Like, if you've already shagged, you know, isn't that a bit weird? Or is
no,
it weird?
I think that's a different level of friend. I think that's a different level of... You can be friends with someone. You can't be, like, best fucking friends with someone. I mean, I've got exes that I talk to about their current partners and whatever else, and they'll tell me about that sort of stuff. But I wouldn't say, oh, do you want to come over for fucking Chinese and chill on the sofa?
You're listening to Fubar Radio.
Fubar Radio.
Fubar Radio.
Fubar Radio.
Fubar Radio.
So... now we have the privilege of the incredible Dame Kelly Holmes joining us on the show. Thank you so much for joining me today, my love. I mean, I know that you have an incredibly busy schedule. I was Googling you yesterday and I was like, jeez, she's up to so much. So the most recent thing that I want to talk to you about is the new research for the Nuffield Health. So Brits are now moving more, 18 minutes more than usual compared to 2022. How positive is this increase in activity in your opinion?
Well, it's a good step forward, isn't it? The fact that we're moving more. However, we're still not moving enough.
I know.
And so I don't think we should get excited. I think, you know, 83 minutes compared to the NHS recommended of 150 minutes. We're kind of like missing the boat here.
Yeah, literally. Some days...
start prioritising this.
Exactly. Some days I like move 150 minutes, like if you're counting all the steps and stuff. So that, to me, is obviously... when I read that, I was like, that is crazy numbers. Because what does that mean people are doing all day, every day? Are they just sat down? Is that what they're doing?
There's 150 in a week. So that's...
I know.
Like, next to nothing, really. And the problem is that what I think people aren't recognizing by not moving is the long-term detrimental effects to themselves. Mm-hmm. Whether that is helping to minimize long-term or illnesses or diseases, or supporting their mental health. And this is why movement or exercise is absolutely vital, because when you get to a point of if only I did, that's too late.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, at the end of the day, you know, we know that there's a decline of people's mental health, from young people in particular, and women and people across society, but also that we're seeing more prevalence in disease and long-term illness. It's down to us to take accountability as individuals to combat that.
Yeah, 100%. I think maybe because my whole Instagram Explore page is just people doing workouts, but I feel like we are definitely on an upward trend with people becoming more interested in fitness, but then, you know, that's only... still a small percentage of it. And I think the main thing that I try and push now with my clients is exactly what you just said. It's not just about training for the physical aesthetics of it. It's about everything else. The mental... I mean, I definitely train for my mental health. I am a horrible person if I haven't trained. I don't know about you. But I'm definitely better once I've trained, just in general, more energized. Like, you know, I want to hang out with people, a lot more sociable, things like that. But also for my physical health, as in, like, not just about how I look, a big bum, like abs and all that stuff, whatever, that's like kind of a bonus. But it's about I just feel so much better, like so much healthier. I know it sounds like cliche, but it's true, isn't it?
No, it really is. And I think I agree with everything you've said. You know, I mean, it's not just, shouldn't just be this aesthetic side, but if that's what's gonna
the bonus, yeah,
you moving, then fine,
yeah,
you know, because you're doing something good. If it's about achievement, you know, setting yourself a goal and doing something, like somebody doing a couch to 5k,
yeah,
I felt that they'd never do it. The achievement at the end is so rewarding, you know. Even if it's about getting out with mates, socializing,
yeah,
for a long walk, and then looking at steps and thinking, oh my god, look how many steps I've done. Sometimes it's small gains that you don't realize the impact of it in you, and like you say, your motivation and your energy. But also I think that, you know, when you do fitness, for me personally, that's the only time in my day that I am doing something solely for
you.
Me.
Yes, same.
Solely for me. I'm not doing it for somebody else. I'm not doing it for work. I'm not doing it because somebody else feels like I have to get out and do it. So even if I'm doing it with somebody else, if I'm actually exercising at the same time as somebody else, they're not pushing my body. They're not making me run. They're not lifting my weights for me. I have to do
that's
it.
That's you,
and
yeah.
I think that is really important, that people know that time can be quite small, but you are doing it purely for you.
Yeah, it's like that's a self-love, isn't it? So yeah, 100%. That's why half the time my content goes in the bin, because I'm like, I don't want to get my tripod out. I want to go to the gym and I just want to train, because it's my time to put my music on and just like zone out and push myself. And it is that, like, just getting started and those small baby steps, like, are just, once you start to feel that like accomplishment, you're like, oh, you know what, that actually felt really good, like, let's do a bit more of that. Maybe next week I'll go for two walks rather than one, you know. So do you think enough is being done to get people exercising? Do you think it's out? I know that obviously, as I said, there is social media, there are, it is a lot more prominent in the world, but for people that aren't necessarily that way, what's the word, you know, in tune to get started, do you think there's enough being done to try and encourage them to do so?
Well, no, I mean, I think this is why Nuffield is calling on the government to, like, publish a national movement strategy, which kind of sets out policies of roles of physical fitness and activity, and how it can play a massive role in preventing and managing long-term illness. Mm-hmm. I think it needs to come higher up as well, because like you said, and like me, I will do it because it's part of my DNA. I love it, I feel great, and you know, I've had highs and lows of it. I've always done it in my life. I started at a young age. I was in the army as a physical training instructor, as elite athlete. I've been retired for many years now, but I still love to keep fit, and I know,
because you know how good it feels.
Right, but a lot of people still don't. And actually, if we're thinking about the impact on the NHS, we're thinking about the decline of young people's mental health, and we're also thinking about now that women in particular are looking into supporting their health as they get slightly older. It's got to become part of a national strategy, that it's important that everyone does it. And it does become accessibility. So obviously, if you have clients, do social media, but we know a massive population don't even know how to access that still. And the population that don't are either the ones that don't choose physical fitness as their tool, so like the younger kids will be on games and whatever and all that lot, and older people that yet aren't in tune with the fact like Instagram is something for them. So you've got to then go, well, how else do we get these messages out, you know? And so it has to be campaigns, it has to be like on radios, it has to be on TV, it has to be saying, look, sort it out.
Start sooner.
Be here, and if we're lucky to be healthy, we have to maintain it. There's a lot of people that are suffering from illness, a lot of people that are getting onset of disease, and a lot of people that are suffering the mental health because they haven't taken this seriously.
I agree. I think everyone, I mean, it's never too late to start, right? But I just think introducing it when you're listening to this, guys, start now. If you haven't been outside for a few days, get your trainers on and get out. So
Look at a step count. Just set yourself a goal.
Yeah, literally.
Look at how much you haven't done. I mean, I've done hardly anything today, and I have quite a good target. So I'm in my head, I'm thinking,
let me check
my steps. But it gives me a buzz.
Oh my God, you know? I've only done 3,000 steps today. Normally by this time, I've taken the dogs out, I've been to the gym, and today has just been one of those days, guys. Okay, my love, thank you so much for joining us today. I feel like I've learnt so much, and it would be amazing to have you on for longer next time, because I know there's so much I want to know about your Athens Olympics, everything that you do for yourself and not just about other people. But it was being a pleasure having you on the show, and I hope to see you again very, very soon. Good luck with everything.
Thank you, Gary.
Thanks, my love. Bye.
FUBAR Radio presents Access
All Areas. We have the absolute icon, legend, Janice Dickinson.
I'm here.
Do you still enjoy doing reality shows, or do you now see it as more of like a part of your job that you like have to do?
I do really enjoy it. I don't enjoy the actuality of eating fish eyeballs.
Well, yeah, there's that side to Amazonas.
Or goat's gonads, or vagina of cow.
But you do like the sort of social side, do you? Like just
the social side was fantastic. Just getting to know people and sleeping with people and eating with people when we didn't really have enough food. Access all
areas. Every Wednesday.
FUBAR Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back. How amazing was Callie Holmes? I honestly love talking to her. She's so amazing. I love following her on Instagram as well. And she's done some amazing things. She's a bloody gold Olympian winner, like, back in the day. And I wanted to talk to her about that, but she had to go because she's a busy lady. So hopefully we'll get her back on. But in the meantime, we shall do some listener questions. So, first of all, if this is my client, and I think it might be because she listens to every episode every week, her name is Eugenia, but we call her Hen. She's asked, do fat burners or things like CLA conjugated linoleic acid actually work? If this is you, Hen, do not go and buy this, okay? It is a marketing tool. Stick to the plan and you will get results. But for those of you that don't know what it is, so I have got some notes here because it's, as you can tell, I don't know what this is. So I have done some research on it. So first of all, you know that word, CLA is, let me just get to it here. It is a naturally occurring fatty acid found in meat and dairy products. And research shows it's effective for fat loss in animals, but the evidence in humans is less promising. Are you an animal or are you a human, Hen? I'm asking you this. Or Eugenia, if it's not Hen, then, you know, I'm telling you as well. So, from basically the long and short of it is, many ineffective fat burning supplements are on the market and CLA is one of them. And the research suggests that, yes, CLA is one of them. Its fat burning effects in animals are impressive, but also don't translate to humans as well. Besides the amount of fat loss that it might occur with CLA, it doesn't outweigh its potential harmful effects. So it can have like effects on your digestive system, like side effects, I mean. You know, it is proven to kind of depress hunger cravings and therefore would make you less, you know, decrease your appetite. But that isn't always a good thing. You know, over time with minimizing, you know, going into a deficit and eating less will also do the same thing, but you just have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And, you know, at the end of the day, I feel like for me, if you want to lose weight, obviously there's lots of, people are different and there's loads of individual factors to everyone's journey, but I wouldn't recommend going and getting CLA just to start burning fat. If you're doing the right things, like following a program and putting your best efforts in and using resistance training, building muscle mass, because at the end of the day, the more muscle mass you have, the higher metabolic rates, so therefore the, you know, more fat you'll be burning. So if you're doing a structured program, if you're in a deficit as well, which means eating less than your overall daily intake, so on your Apple Watch, it's the red number at the bottom if you've got an Apple Watch, your overall daily expenditure, if you're eating less than that, you will be in a deficit. And over a consistent, substantial amount of time, you will get results. So CLA is, as I've said, just a marketing tool for people to think that they can speed up the process, but it isn't always the safest route to go down. A safer alternative is to incorporate more CLA-rich foods, such as dairy and grass-fed beef, into your diet before resorting to supplements. So, Hen, if that is you, listen up. I'm going to add more red meat into your diet plan. Okay, so moving on. Beth asks, I'm 22 and I want to start playing football. However, I have never been very good at sport and I'm scared that if I try out for a team, I'll get rejected. How can I overcome this and do you have any top tips for finding a team? So, actually, after speaking to Sarah earlier when she said about people wanting to go and watch a match, I think it probably, a rugby match, it probably sounds the same for football in your area. If you just go online and Google your, you know, say, for example, we're in Caledonian Road, like, you know, five-a-side football teams, it will come up, you know, women's football teams, it should come up, I assume. And at the end of the day, Beth, like, you're not, I assume, not going in now because you want to become a professional football player. I mean, if you do, you know, the world's your oyster. But you're going in to enjoy it, have fun, and because you love the sport. And I can assure you that there's going to be so many other girls, women, that are doing the same thing. And, you know, if they're like me and you and they're nice people, they will welcome you with open arms and know that it's like you're going to play for fun and not to be. I mean, I'm sure there's a certain element of competition in there somewhere when it comes to, you know, playing the games and stuff. But at the end of the day, you're there for the fitness, the fun, you know, the community element of it. So try and go in and like not sell yourself short before you even get there, because you never know. You might actually like have a really good match and be like, you know, I'm actually not as bad as I thought I was going to be. And I think, you know, when you get there, like, if you're just open and honest with how you feel with stuff as well, there's probably, once again, people that also have come and might just be a few weeks ahead of you, or maybe they joined the year before and they can be like, oh, I felt like that last year, but actually, like, you know, who cares? It's just a laugh. Just get your boots on and let's go and get muddy. I assume that's how I would approach it anyway. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of a boost of confidence, and I really hope that you find somewhere to go and enjoy it. Okay, and then lastly, Liam asks, is caffeine actually bad for you? I drink about 2 to 3 cups of coffee a day, and I've been told I should cut down, but I really need the energy boost. Okay, so this is interesting because I want to know who's told you to cut it down. If it's like 3 full-fat, big frappuccino coffees a day, loads of sugar, whipped cream and all that jazz, I wouldn't suggest continually drinking 3 of them a day. Just because the sugar, the fats and all that involved in those drinks are obviously not the most ideal for long-term health. But caffeine on its own actually has like some health benefits to it. You'd have to drink a substantial amount for it to become detrimental to like your actual like physical health, you know. I think it's over 400 milligrams of caffeine a day is considered too much, but that is like up to like 4 to 5 cups of it a day. It can lead to like things like insomnia, nausea, anxiety, just things that, you know, they're not nice things. But that being said, caffeine can have a good, you know, it can be good for increasing your energy levels. It can be good for focus. And I just think, don't overthink it. If you think that you're drinking too much, then maybe try and like, apparently you shouldn't have a coffee until 90 minutes after you wake up because your brain is, you've basically got loads of energy and focus without having caffeine first thing in the morning. So try and use your natural body's function first for 90 minutes and then have your first coffee. And then maybe that brings you into mid-morning. And then I would suggest then after your lunch, if you're feeling a little bit, you know, sometimes you feel a bit sluggish after your lunch and you could have a little nap, have your second coffee then. And then usually I would never recommend having a coffee after 2 p.m. because it can affect your sleep. So that would bring you down to 2 coffees and see how you feel. I know for a fact that when I stop drinking coffee, not even for weeks, for a matter of days, when I have one then, I really feel the impact of it. So if you cut back and start to reintroduce it again, you might get to feel it a little bit more because your body might actually be quite resilient to it now after drinking it for a long period of time continuously, if you get what I mean. So all in all, don't beat yourself up about it. Maybe try and bring it down to 2. Try and like time it a little bit better rather than waking up and thinking that you have to rely on it straight away, because that's not the case. And if you are drinking loads of milk with it and stuff, pull it back, have some black coffee, because you never know, you might not even like coffee. You only like the actual sugar and milk that comes with it. So hopefully that helps you, my love. Thank you so much for your listener questions this week. Remember that if you want me to blabber on about your question, then please do send them into our Instagram at What The Health Show. And we have loads of amazing listener questions from previous shows as well. So you have to go and listen to those as well on Spotify or all other good podcast platforms. But until then, I shall see you next week. Same time, 11 a.m. Lots of love. See you on the flip side.